It's Tuesday, June 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, British officials and the top U.S. diplomat work to calm Brexit anxiety as markets continue down. Israel and Turkey reach a major agreement.
That in and of itself is significant and has a lot of people scratching their heads wondering what's going on.
An interesting trend in cybersecurity is puzzling. Also ahead, you may now visit New York virtually and for real at the same time. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Britain's crisis deepened Monday as British and EU officials scrambled to deal with the shock of British voters' decision to leave the European Union and ease both anger and uncertainty that has plunged the country into what some describe as its worst disarray since World War II. In London, the British Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, in his first comments since the so-called Brexit vote, sought Monday to calm market nerves, insisting the British economy is about as strong as it can be to face the challenge of leaving the EU.
It will not be plain sailing in the days ahead. But let me be clear, you should not underestimate our resolve. We were prepared for the unexpected, and we are equipped for whatever happens. And we are determined that, unlike 8 years ago, Britain's financial system will help our country deal with any shocks and dampen them, not contribute to those shocks or make them worse.
In his first remarks to Parliament since the vote, Prime Minister David Cameron said the British economy is strong enough to deal with the turbulence. It is clear that markets are volatile. There are some companies considering their investments, and we know this is going to be far from plain sailing, he said. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry stopped in London Monday and reaffirmed what he said is an unbreakable bond between the United States and Britain. Kerry assured Britain the special relationship between the two countries will not change because of the Brexit decision. Speaking after a meeting Monday with British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond, the top U.S. diplomat said that the relationship is perhaps even more important in these days of questioning on behalf of many people. Earlier in Brussels, Mr. Kerry appealed for calm amid the anxiety that British voters' decision has caused in Europe and in global markets around the world. Market profits for this year have all but evaporated. But appearing for us from New York is VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino with the latest on how the Brexit shockwaves are affecting investors.
Well, the latest is it's a little bit more of the same as we saw on Friday, although the move is not quite as extreme. Analysts and traders I've spoken to have essentially said the same thing that we said from the initial reaction, that you will see 3 to 5 days of this type of action until the markets consolidate and figure out what direction they're going to take. I spoke with Nick Colas, who is a chief market strategist over at Convergex in New York, and essentially he said the same thing. Capital markets will do what they always do in such circumstances, overly discount the downside case, and then slowly find their way to the more nuanced truth. For this week, that means a continued rally in the U.S. dollar and safe haven global sovereign debt, which is why we're seeing yields move so much lower. So expect some knee-jerk rallies as well as markets seesaw to a new equilibrium. Key tells for a tradable bottom, the dollar versus the British pound and euro. What the VIX does, which is a SIBO volatility index, a measure of market volatility or fear in the market, and what oil prices do as well. Commodities have sort of seen a knee-jerk reaction because of the spike in the dollar, with the exception of gold, which is considered a safe haven asset in terms of market volatility.
Well, if you've never seen what fear and uncertainty can do to a market, this is it. There is talk that there may be some renegotiating or perhaps even another referendum, a redo, if you will, in the aftermath of Brexit.
Right. And, you know, that lends more volatility to the markets because this is uncharted historic territory. This is more of a political and social issue than it is an economic issue. So there's a couple choices here. You can go as planned, or you could say, whoops, we didn't mean to do this, and start the process all over again, which I think can lend to some civil unrest to take away what the popular vote has established in the referendum. I think there could potentially be a tweak, and they can use Brexit as a leverage to renegotiate better in areas of curbing immigration, taming EU centralized control and bureaucracy. So I'm hoping it'll be more of a middle of the road type of negotiation. But for right now, I think we're just going to have to navigate some tricky markets over the next couple of days until we see some sort of leadership emerge.
And for the average investor, I mean, we're already hearing companies saying, well, our business really isn't directed toward Europe, or Brexit doesn't really affect us much, and we're just down because everybody else is down. The average investor has to kind of really watch what's going on very carefully in this time period.
Right. Well, think about it. A stock like a Netflix, right? Why would you not continue your Netflix subscription just because of what's happening over in the UK? So there are some great stocks that are getting beat up in sympathy with the rest of the market. But there's been a lot of traders out there that have said asset prices have raised too quickly, too far. This is your time to potentially look for some buy opportunities, as we've shaved, you know, a few percent off of asset prices. I think in terms of the retail investor, like you and I, like any other volatility period in the market, let it work itself out. That's why we have averages. It's why we look at long-term, 5, 10, 15, 20-year averages. You can't isolate your investment style based on one market event.
And we did have quite a run-up before the Brexit vote, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, we were up 500 points in just 5 trading sessions prior to that ugly open on Friday. So we were essentially back to where we started. You don't talk about it much in the media when the market has a spectacular run to the upside. Capital markets don't function with such extreme moves. That's not the way they properly function. So you have to look at it where we're coming from. On Thursday night, going into this vote, the S&P 500 was just under 2% from touching all-time highs. So you have to think about where we're coming through. We talk a lot about the move to the downside, but there is some risk going so quickly to the upside.
We always move to the upside with great information from Jill Malandrino in New York. Jill, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, we turn now to what's buzzing online with our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, and we're going to Brexit from the Brexit talk for a little bit. She's right here in the studio to tell us the latest about a decision by the Supreme Court that everybody's talking about. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. That's right. Hashtag SCOTUS, short for the Supreme Court of the United States, has been trending since Monday morning. And the court decided to overturn a Texas law that placed restrictions on abortion providers. The 2013 law reduced the number of abortion clinics in the state, making many women in Texas to fly to another state altogether to get the procedure done.
Wow, that's pretty extreme. How did you find out about this?
From Justice Don Willett on Twitter. His handle is @JusticeWillett, and he sent out this tweet. Breaking, hashtag SCOTUS rules 5-3, the Texas omnibus abortion law is unconstitutional. Hashtag HB2. Now, that hashtag refers to House Bill 2. Justice Willett is a good person to follow if you're interested in breaking news from and factoids about the Supreme Court, because he's very prolific on it, with nearly 22,000 tweets so far.
Well, because there's such a big divide in the country surrounding abortion rights, I'm not surprised that that's trending on social media.
Absolutely. And it has so many facets to it, from religious aspects to women's rights. A woman named Terry tweeted, "Who cares if Donald Trump or some men in Congress are pro-life? When are they going to get it? They don't own our bodies." But a man named Leo, presumably a Republican, tweeted this, "Not surprised. Liberals are okay with killing 3,000 babies a day, but want to take away our Second Amendment rights."
So he was linking the rights to bear arms. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. And the gun control issue was brought up quite frequently. To CNN Politics Facebook post about the SCOTUS decision, the most liked comment also mentioned it. A man named Darren left this comment. "Imagine if we regulated guns in the same manner as we do abortion rights. One gun shop per state, note from your doctor prior to getting a gun, and physical probe just because the list is endless." More than 700 people liked that reply within 5 hours. Jim, back to you.
Well, thank you for that wrap-up, G. And you may tweet your questions and comments to our Twitter stream. The International Edition handle is @VOA_IE. While you're there, tag G and myself on those tweets. Our handles are @VOA Stevenson and @GAbbyLee. Among the top stories trending in Asia at this hour, UN office builds human rights case against Pyongyang. Afghan forces kill 135 militants linked to Islamic State. Japanese stocks rise despite Brexit market uncertainty. China's slowdown impacts neighbors, but other factors offer a buffer. Kabul's peace talks with a former warlord are deadlocked. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at our voanews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The Israeli and Turkish prime ministers have announced the restoration of full diplomatic relations, which had been frozen for 6 years following the killing of Turkish activists who sought to break Israel's economic blockade of Gaza. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim announced the countries will restore their ambassadors as soon as possible. The re-establishment of full diplomatic relations follows more than a year of secret negotiations. Relations collapsed when Israeli commandos killed 10 Turkish activists who tried to sail to Gaza, which was under naval blockade in 2010. Under the deal, Yildirim said Israel will pay families of the dead activists $20 million in compensation. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, speaking simultaneously in Rome, said the naval blockade of Gaza would continue, saying it's vital to preventing arms delivery. Ankara has been demanding Israel lift the embargo in return for full diplomatic relations. Yildirim said under the agreement, Turkey would be allowed to deliver aid to Gaza through Israel.
Cuma günü ilk gemimiz İsrail'in Ashdod limanına.
He said the first ship loaded with more than 10,000 tons of humanitarian aid will leave for the Israeli port of Ashdod on Friday. Yildirim said under the agreement, Israel's blockade would be effectively ended under Turkish leadership. He also said Turkey will build a 200-bed hospital in Gaza. Israel and Turkey were once allies whose relationship extended to close military ties. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry welcomed the move. Washington has been lobbying hard for a rapprochement between two of its most important allies in the region. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Amid these turbulent financial times, computer security remains a top priority. And there's actually some good news about hacking attacks, as we hear from VOA's Doug Bernard in a conversation with International Edition host Susan Yaki.
Ever since the internet really began integrating with our lives, we've seen an escalating frequency of hacking attacks right up through the last couple of years. You think of the OPM hack and those hitting insurance companies and whatnot. Billions upon billions of documents have been stolen. But interestingly, over the last 6 to 9 months, what the FBI and other law enforcement agencies have charted is a fairly consistent decline in the number of large-scale hacking attacks targeting U.S. institutions. Now, 6 to 9 months, well, it's hard to know if that really is going to play out over the long run, but that in and of itself is significant and has a lot of people scratching their heads wondering what's going on.
Well, does this mean the hackers have just given up?
No. No, the hackers have not given up. There are still plenty of what I would call nuisance attacks, things like ransomware, which we've talked about before, things like organized crime, stealing credit cards and that kind of thing. Yeah, they're serious, but they're really more of a kind of a nuisance level. What we're talking about here are these massive, large-scale attacks targeting U.S. institutions. Consider, you probably know this, Voice of America, for example, our computer system for a little over a year was attacked and infiltrated by Chinese hackers. They were very quietly sitting there and basically reading through all of the documents, all of the stuff that we were creating there. We didn't even know that. That I say this because that is in no way unusual. Chinese hackers, a lot of this has been coming from China, have been very aggressive about trying to penetrate just about any computer system of a significant U.S. institution. So what we're seeing now is less of those massive attacks.
So what accounts for this drop?
Several things. I think, interestingly, first, you may recall when Chinese President Xi Jinping was here in Washington on a state visit, he and President Obama had a head-to-head meeting about hacking. And reportedly, the president was very stern in his comments to say, look, this has gotten out of control. We know a lot of this activity is coming from China. You know, he probably didn't say this, but we do suspect, U.S. officials do suspect, that there is some involvement by the Chinese government or the Chinese military. And so China really seems to have taken that seriously, at least for the moment. Now, it may be because that they've already learned what they wanted to learn, and they're just sort of sitting through and sifting through the data. I think something else is going on, too, which is, you know, you remember all those headlines about, you know, this hack or that hack and all these personal secret documents stolen. I think industry leaders and politicians have finally gotten serious about cybersecurity. Their IT people were always there, always sending up the warning flags, but they just really weren't listened to. And I think now, finally, people in positions of authority are listening and are taking cybersecurity really seriously.
Well, does this mean we can breathe easier?
Well, you know, it's my job to always scare you.
You do.
And so, no, part of that responsibility is that everybody has a role to play. So we've talked before, and I'm just going to once again say it is critically important for individuals to keep their computer system up to date so holes get fixed, to use antivirus, to have strong, robust passwords that you change regularly, you don't write down, and that you don't use across all of your accounts, and that, of course, finally, you don't open up anything that somebody has sent you that you haven't specifically asked for.
VOA's Doug Bernard, and you'll find more of his work at our website, voanews.com. Also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE, and you can like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. Traveling to a strange city can be challenging, but a hotel in New York is using the latest digital technology to help its guests navigate the Big Apple. As International Edition's David Byrd reports, the hotel uses the latest information from the Time Out Travel Group to help guests have a truly interactive experience.
Step into the lobby of the Renaissance Hotel in Midtown Manhattan, and you might notice two bright blue footprints on the floor. Step onto those footprints, and several large circles appear on the floor with 10-minute walk, 20-minute walk, 30-minute walk, and other titles in them. Pick one of the circles, and attractions, restaurants, and things to do within that distance pop up on a screen in front of you. See something you like? Well, you can learn more by just pointing at it. David DeFalco is the hotel's general manager.
So you step into the two footsteps that are actually on the ground to give you some direction on that. And the first thing you'll notice is six buckets will appear on the ground. And those buckets have different parameters around them. So, for example, one of the buckets will say 10-minute walk, and another bucket will say morning. So if you step into the 10-minute walk bucket, you will have nine pieces of content that will display on the screen in front of you that give you nine different attractions to be able to go to that are within a 10-minute walk of the property.
DeFalco says that pointing at an attraction you see causes a tile to blow up on the screen in front of you, and you can get very detailed information about that attraction, like prices, hours, menus for restaurants, and other information. The content comes from the Time Out New York portal, part of the worldwide Time Out Travel Network. David DeFalco says the information is refreshed daily from Time Out, so what you see is the latest information.
The partnership with Time Out is that our server every morning pulls content from their server at 4 a.m. and refreshes all of the items up on the Discovery portal to ensure that they're still relevant and that we have the newest and greatest attractions that fall into the buckets on the ground.
The digital elements are designed to appeal to young people, something that Jessica Rodriguez of the Wagstaff Worldwide Marketing Company says is vital for the travel and tourism business.
I don't think the traditional hotel experience has gotten stale necessarily, but I do think that we do that there is a need for wow factors as part of a differentiator for a brand narrative story or to get people to book into your hotel.
David DeFalco says that his hotel sits at a crossroads and aims to meet the needs of all its guests.
Renaissance is really starting to move down the road of really catering to the millennial traveler. We're at a very unique time right now in the travel industry. We have three full generations traveling with us. We have baby boomers, we have Gen X, we have Gen Y. It's a very unique situation to be in as a hotelier as we're trying to cater to all of those needs as we go forward.
The Renaissance Hotel in Midtown Manhattan opened in March of this year in the Garment District neighborhood across from Penn Station and Madison Square Garden. All the digital elements are located on the ground floor. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. Time for us to take a little time out. But, you know, we're digital, so you can find us anytime you like at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook, VOA Now's the place to go, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter. Engineer Jim Harmon. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. Come back when you can, and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Central America's Northern Triangle countries are taking important steps in their long effort to rein in corruption and criminal enterprise and to establish the rule of law. Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, the countries of the Northern Triangle, have for decades been plagued by high levels of violence, transnational crime, criminal gang activity, and corruption. As a result, the three countries have suffered years of social and economic stagnation, lack of economic opportunity for vast segments of society, and deep-seated issues of social and economic inequity. And one of the greatest obstacles standing in the way of effective reform has always been impunity that allows criminals to continue operating beyond the reach of justice. Working in partnership with the governments of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, the United States is investing in the U.S. Strategy for Engagement in Central America, which seeks to improve prosperity, security, and governance across the Northern Triangle. The U.S. is employing a three-pronged approach to reach the security goal, said Assistant Secretary of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs William Brownfield. First, we support local programs that impact people who live in affected communities. Second, we help to reform institutions, offer training and capacity building to create better performing law enforcement, criminal prosecution, courts, and corrections. And finally, we boost those organizations that provide law enforcement management, control, and protection of ports and borders on a daily basis. And we've seen some excellent results over the past 12 months, said Assistant Secretary Brownfield. In Guatemala, a wide range of government officials, including the president and vice president, have been removed and arrested on allegations of corruption, thanks to a long investigation by the UN International Commission Against Impunity in Guatemala, commonly known by its Spanish acronym, CSIC. In Honduras, a civil society-led commission is reviewing members of the national police and has terminated a significant percentage of the highest-ranking officers it has reviewed to date. More positively, over 50 new model police precincts in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador will serve as a core for a community-based security strategy. Additionally, some 60,000 youths from all three countries have undergone a gang resistance education and training program to help them resist recruitment by gangs. The governments of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras have embarked on a path of transformation that will improve their people's economic opportunity, governance, and public safety. The United States is proud to aid them in their efforts.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.